Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Just glad to be back here. It's been a while. I think I'm only called to fill in now whenever there is a conclave. So we'll see when the next one is. But I had a question for you, Rob.
Yeah.
Are you of French descent?
I am not. The name is, but it was an adopted name handed down a couple of generations. So
I thought maybe you were, you know, maybe you played hockey for the Canadians in Montreal or something. You have, it sounds like a hockey name.
Well, I like that.
Rob LaFrenz.
Scores.
Goal scored by number 17, Rob LaFrenz.
I love it.
Assisted by number 12, Yvan Cornoyer. And Jacques Lemaire at 1474.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, as I said, I'm not here that often anymore, but when there is a conclave, you know who they call. Habamus Elton Jim.
I just want to know what kind of smoke is rising from the studio.
It's kind of gray, which pretty much sums up my career. Well, Habamus Chicago Pop'em. How about that? I don't know about you, but I was up. And I've been up every day at 4 a.m. to watch all the papal things. I like a good conclave, and I was watching when the white smoke came, and when I heard that, I don't speak Italian, even though I should with my last name, but when I heard Roberto, I've been kind of Pope candidate watching, and I heard Roberto, and I said, you know, there's an American named Robert in the mix here. And when they said, you know, then in English they were translating, and it was like, we've got an American Pope. And now Chicago is Pope crazy.
Yeah.
Hey, Andy, do you know why he was initially thought to be a Cub fan?
Yeah, because his mom is a Cub fan.
Oh, okay.
His mom's family grew up on the north side.
Have you seen the video from the 2005?
I have.
World Series?
Game one. Yep, he's on the broadcast of Fox.
That is crazy. First of all, I'd love to know how the heck they found that video. Like, how did that resurface?
Yeah.
Because it was just kind of a random shot of the crowd.
Right. I think his brother mentioned it to Channel 9 that they were at the game.
Oh.
And okay. I'm sure that triggered somebody to go back and go, I wonder if he's on the broadcast at all. I wonder if there's a random crowd shot. And they probably rewatched the game and saw
it. Oh, if you haven't seen it, I don't know if it's on YouTube. I've seen it on Facebook. People have put it up on their TikTok accounts or things like that. But it is wild. There's Bobby Jenks pitching. He throws a strike. And then they just do the usual kind of cut to a crowd shot. And there's Pope Leo.
Yep.
And he's looking very pensive. He's got his head down and he's watching, and then there's a kid next to him with a father. But that is wild. So yeah, there's no question as to what kind of fan he is. the Cubs tried to initially claim him, but that didn't work. That didn't stick very long.
This is true. You know, I guess if one team needed divine intervention more, it would probably be the White Sox.
Exactly. And now to think that the future Pope was at the last White Sox World Series, what does that now mean perhaps for this season? Now, he was just a priest at that time, but now he's the Holy Father. He's the Holy See. I think he's got a little more clout than usual.
You would think
divine intervention this year. That should be their new slogan. My gosh! But Chicago going nuts. The Sun Times, of course, had Da Pope on their headline, and they're already selling T-shirts and mugs with that.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
what I would have loved. I mean, you know, he seems like he's a nice guy. I mean, it's hard to tell. He's only come into public a few times here, done a few things. I was up this morning, though, when he gave a little prayer, and I was up at 4 a.m. watching that. But I think it would have been funny if he would have come out when he comes out, when the curtain opens and he sort of waves to the crowd and does that little hand gesture, I would have loved for him to say, "Hey, I'm as surprised as you are." You know, Francis said "Buona sera," which endeared him to the Italian crowd. But wow, what a shock! All you were hearing for 2 weeks is there is no chance there will be an American Pope. There is no chance there will be an American Pope. And wow, I don't remember if people, some people are old enough to remember, but there hasn't been this much excitement about a Pope, at least in Chicago, since like 1979 when Pope John Paul came and drove around the city with because of our huge Polish population. He came to Chicago and served a huge mass in Grant Park. There was the Grant Park attendance estimates always vary. They go from 100,000 to 1.5 million.
Yeah.
It's hard. I don't know who's doing the guessing, but needless to say, I do remember seeing that. And it was, Grant Park was totally packed to the rafters. And I remember I'm from the northwest side of Chicago, and he drove down Milwaukee Avenue right through one of the more Polish ethnic, you know, areas there right near Lawrence and Milwaukee, where the Copernicus Center is.
Yep.
And I remember friends of mine who lived not far from there, they were all lining the streets, and they said they saw him drive by. So, yeah, we are definitely in Pope mode here in Chicago. Portillo's has a beef sandwich, which I don't see how it's that much different.
It's not.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? I was watching a special on the Pope on ABC News with David Muir, and they mentioned Portillo's. So who's ever doing the marketing Portillo's, you know, a little star for you.
Success.
And I even saw the White Sox are printing up Pope Leo jerseys with the number 14, since he's Leo the 14th. So, yeah, I can only imagine what Bear fans are going to wear. Because there's no question now. I mean, okay, there was a question whether he's a Cubs fan or a Sox fan, but everybody's a Bear fan.
Correct.
So I would imagine you're going to see a lot of those Bishop hats, and you're going to see a lot of Pope stuff, especially in the fall when it's a little, although that hat might be good for the winter.
Good point.
Yeah.
Put some ear flaps on it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there are kind of flaps that hang from that thing anyway.
I love the memes with his robes all covered in bears.
Oh, yeah. This is going to be. My only hope is that, I mean, look, it's a great civic pride, and there should be. Not only is he the first American Pope, but then to be from Chicago, be from your city. So any city would be proud and be doing these kind of things. I even saw Aurelio's Pizza had a Poperoni pizza.
Yeah.
So I understand. I just hope we don't get too crazy and we get like Mayberry, where they get a little full of themselves when a celebrity comes. Let's I hope we can calm it down a little. We don't need to over merchandise it, but I'm sure initially there should definitely be some excitement, because my gosh, what are the odds of that happening? It's almost like a movie.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, even Conclave didn't do that. Even the movie Conclave said, you know, look, I might bring a transgender Pope, but not an American. You know, so, I mean, wow, what a shock. But so far, he is getting high grades and high praise from people of all religions and the political world as well. So good luck to Leo. We can affect the one thing I would have loved is when he came out and they would have said, you know, here's Pope Leo, and he would have also said this.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello there. Hello.
That's my favorite Leo.
Uncle Leo.
Uncle Leo.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Leo. Hello. You know, your cousin Jeffrey's funnier than all the rest of you. Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards this morning. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. No switching. Habamus Elton Jim. Filling in for Dean. I'm not sure if he's on business today or he's just taking a well-deserved break, but whatever the case is, I'll certainly do my best to keep you entertained and informed until 1 o'clock today. Just a few. We'll talk a little bit more about the Pope a little later in the show, but One of the things that I found interesting in just watching the lead up to the conclave, like I said, you know, I am, I was born and raised a Catholic. I went to 8 years of grammar school on the Northwest Side at St. Bartholomew Church. You may have heard about St. Bart's over the last year or so, because it was being used for a while earlier this year, I think, as a temporary shelter for some of the migrants that were coming to Chicago. It was a little controversial. And then after that, I went to St. Patrick High School, also on the Northwest Side, right on Belmont and Austin. Final four in the IHSA basketball tournament this year. Thank you very much. Go Shamrocks. And so I was certainly born and raised into the Catholic faith. I was an altar boy from sixth grade through eighth grade. In fact, I was even, just because of those really cool vestments that the priest got to wear, I was always thinking about, well, that looks kind of like a pretty cool gig. But I must admit, I am not a practicing Catholic anymore, but I am still drawn to the traditions of the Catholic faith. And I'm still very interested in it from a historical standpoint or a theological standpoint, even though I don't follow it dogmatically. But yeah, so whenever there's talk about a pope or the history of the church, I've always been very interested in that. And so I have watched this with real legitimate interest from a historical background. In fact, even when Francis passed away, you know, they were referring to Francis as the people's pope, which certainly is a an appropriate description. But I put on my Facebook page, hey, let's not remember the first people's pope really was John Paul II. He really changed the papacy in terms of it becoming a much more less isolated kind of position, and really getting more personal contact with the people. There's no question that that Francis did that and built upon what John Paul established back in the beginning in 1978. And I think one reason why Benedict resigned was that he was an academic. He was kind of an introverted guy, and people loved John Paul. My gosh, they made him a saint a couple of years after his death. And so I think that he just, while I think he was a great theologian and he was a good choice, I think the job and the PR demands of the job became a little too much for Benedict. I think Francis reveled in them. And you can see already now that Pope Leo seems to be somewhere in the middle. I think he's going to be a little more traditional, going back to some of the more traditional Catholic, traditions and the vestments that he's wearing and the messaging. But at the same time, I still think he's going to be doing a lot of or carrying on what Francis did in terms of reaching out and bringing people into the church, as well as taking the church to them. So it will be interesting. So as I was watching all these different papal things going on, I was surprised to see that they had to reinstall the chimney. Now, that chimney, with the smoke coming out, and how funny was it for 3 days that all we were worried about is, when are we going to get smoke? I mean, here in this country, we don't even allow smoking anywhere, but we couldn't wait to see smoke, finally. You know, that's all we talked about on the news. We're expecting smoke anytime. They even had that, the crawl on the news. Soon, smoke. I'm like, how could you predict when the smoke is coming? And did you see those seagulls that were sitting up on the... on the roof, sort of stealing the spotlight. I don't know if whoever controls the smoke saw those seagulls up there, because initially the white smoke came out, and the two seagulls were kind of sitting there, kind of sharing the spotlight with the smoke. And I'm sure the leaders of the Catholic Church are like, hey, this is our moment here. This is white smoke. Because then all of a sudden there was just this billow of white smoke that you didn't even see any. Those seagulls had to fly away. They were probably coughing. There was so much white smoke. So the powers that be said, no, we're not sharing that with anyone. But I was surprised to see that they have to install the chimney. I mean, I can understand within the Sistine Chapel and wherever they burn the actual ballots and all the notes, which becomes the smoke, I can understand if you need to create a temporary incinerator somewhere near or in the Sistine Chapel for that, and then there must be some piping that leads all the way up. But I'm surprised that they take the chimney down and then reinstall it. I mean, why can't you just have, close the flue? I have a fireplace at my house. I close the flue. But keep the chimney up there, because even from a tourist thing, I would think, and I've been to Italy a couple of times, I've been to Rome, we've been to St. Peter's, and I was always looking for the chimney, and now I think that I saw a chimney somewhere and assumed that that was the chimney. Because it's like, well, there's got to be a chimney somewhere. So I didn't know that it was a removable chimney. But I think, once again, nobody does pageantry like the Catholic Church. I would say leave that chimney up there. That's a cool tourist attraction, even if it's not going to blow smoke until the next conclave. I think that would be kind of cool, especially it's kind of kitschy if you think about it, because St. Peter's is so majestic. If you've ever been there, it's... Even if you're an atheist, you have to be impressed with all the statues and the beautiful architecture. I mean, it's impossible not to be awed by that when you're in person. But I think to have that little rusty chimney amidst all that stuff actually looks kind of cool. So, Leo, if you're listening, if you get WGN on WGNradio.com, or maybe your brothers are putting it through the phone right now. I know there's one brother that lives in New Lenox, I believe. Yeah, keep the chimney up there. Don't let them take that chimney down. If it's already down, tell them to put it back up. You've got clout now. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. After the news, we'll be talking to a regular feature that Dean always does every Sunday. We'll be talking to Dr. Jeremy Silver about a few things, so I hope you will... Jim Toronto with you this morning, filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be here till 1 o'clock. Also, I want to say Happy Mother's Day. I've been so Pope crazy the first half hour of the show that I didn't want to bypass the fact that we are celebrating Mother's Day. Glorious, beautiful day. Blue skies looking out the windows here from the WGN studios. Get a chance to see just a little piece of the John Hancock. Well, no, it's the... Is it the Hancock Building anymore? What do we call it now? I know Will has changed this. I think it's the Hancock. Well, hey, I've lived here long enough. I can call it the Hancock Building. And then just to our right here, we got beautiful lake and Navy Pier. It looks gorgeous today. So happy Mother's Day to everyone. In fact, a little later in the show, we will be celebrating Mother's Day. I'd like to get a chance for some... children out there, if you wanted to share either through text, but really through the phones, I'd love to hear some favorite mom's memories. This is a day that we celebrate moms. This is a day that we keep them close to our hearts, especially. We should be doing that every day. This is always a bittersweet day for me because my mom passed away almost 19 years ago. And so while I certainly enjoy the day to remember her and her life, it's also a very sad day because, I just don't get to look in her eyes anymore. If your mom is still around, please take it from somebody who knows. Look into her eyes because you will miss those eyes. Believe me. Those eyes have a deep and devoted, unconditional love that only a mom can share, and you will miss it. So I try my best to keep it burning in my retinas. But if you have the opportunity, please, please, please take advantage of it. And we'll talk a little bit more about moms a little later in the show. But right now, we're going to do a regular feature on the Dean Richards Show. Dr. Jeremy Silver, the Medical Director of Emergency Medicine at Northwestern Medicine Kishwani Hospital. Good morning, Dr. Jeremy Silver.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good. How you doing today? Do you have your mom still with you?
Yes, and I was just sitting here reflecting on your words. Very powerful, and yeah, I thank you for that. And I'm thinking of my mom right now. I know she's listening. And hi, Mom, I love you.
Yeah, very good. Don't forget to say that as much as you can, believe me. Oh, I'm getting choked up here. But anyway, so what I want to talk to you about, Dr. Silver, and you had a few topics for me, and we can also touch on those, because unfortunately, Shawnee not here today. I'm loving Rob LaFrenz, but, you know, we always have the Dave Schwann far-flung forecast, which we did not have today. So we have a little extra minutes to play around with you today. But I did one thing I didn't want to ask you, and it's, part of it's a little from my own personal experience. So now it's 5 years after COVID, and that's the way this segment really developed on Dean's show, was a kind of weekly update on the COVID pandemic 5 years ago. That's where this became kind of a regular part of Dean's show. And so I was just thinking, now after 5 years, are we at a point now where we can start to get some real data in terms of just how effective or ineffective or side effects? Can we start to get a better realistic data proven as opposed to myth proven or politically controversial, you know, statements about really the effectiveness of the COVID, you know, vaccine, or perhaps its detriments? Are we at that point yet, or do we still need more time?
No, I mean, my reading of the literature is pretty definitive. There's, of course, with any kind of medical treatment or medication or vaccine, there's going to be pros and cons. And the retrospective scope of life, you know, as we always look back on science and medicine, it's always going to become clearer over time. And that's just the function of how life works. But you go with what you think is going to be the safest and most effective tool, especially when you're looking at a global pandemic and at the onset of this COVID pandemic, we had a lot of people dying in really awful ways, and many of us in the healthcare field experienced this, not only with colleagues but with patients and even family members. And so, I think honestly, apolitically, both administrations that kind of crossed over this pandemic, the COVID pandemic, did a good job, or a decent job anyway, of trying to figure out how do we go about tacking this down. And the mRNA vaccines, the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines in particular, looking backwards, really just did a tremendous job. They significantly reduced hospitalizations and deaths during the major waves, particularly in older and high-risk populations, of which many people are a member, and that could be high-risk, meaning you have chronic disease, and a 90% effectiveness against severe outcomes during those early variants, the Alpha and Delta, where so many people were dying of severe lung disease. That was an incredible testament to mankind. I mean, almost like a Tower of Babel type moment in the modern era. Truly, I mean, the vaccine development industry typically has gone on like a 10-year life cycle, and we were able to get this vaccine technology, which had, by the way, was out of the gate, right? It was totally fresh. It was tested, developed, authorized in under a year, and billions of doses distributed, you know, globally. In about a year. I mean, it's incredible what humans can do when they work together. So that was the kind of inception of these vaccines, and the boosters have also provided protection against infection, and then we like to think of immunity as being sort of a two-pronged state. You've got your own natural immunity that comes from, as you can hear in my voice, I've got a cold right now. So your body is exposed to a pathogen or a virus or a bacteria, and your body creates these B cells. They're immune cells that remember that pathogen for life. And so next time you get infected, they remember it. So there's that natural immunity, And then there's the other type of immunity, which is the immunization, where you create a non-real version of that virus, either through a killed piece of it, or sometimes they take a live version and they attenuate it, they make it non-lethal, and your body reacts to that. And so the combination of the two, this hybrid immunity, has been extremely effective in helping to turn this virus in a much more mild form, although it still is killing people.
So, my general practitioner basically tells me, you know, I should every 6 months or so, I'm of the age where I should get a booster shot, and I have done that. I was just wondering, as I said before, I've had some little ailments that thankfully if nothing has been overly serious, but just nagging things that. And, you know, I am very attentive to my health. Since 2010, I have started a file on my computer that lists every doctor's appointment I've had, any hospital stay, any ailment, whether large or small. When I went to my new doctor, I gave her a 25-page I printed it out and I said, well, if you want to know what's been happening to me in the last 15 years, here it is. And so I did. I keep the dates, and it's very well documented. And I was just looking through things recently, and I had a few little things that happened that at the time I did not even think would be possibly connected to having recently received one of the COVID shots. But now as 5 years have gone by, I'm looking at this in retrospect, and I'm saying, well, let's see, I had a COVID shot in, say, September, and then in October and November I had this happen and that happen. So I'm just wondering, do we know of any, like, I had some really bad dizziness and vertigo, which I didn't attribute to that, but it was soon after I had the shot. And there were some other things, and I was just wondering, do we know of, and now that's 5 years later, do we know of any reoccurring side effects that may have come from this?
Yeah, you bring up a great point, and that's the kind of the second part of the discussion is, well, what about the downside, right? Is this is the vaccine, you know, is the disease worse than the cure, or is the cure worse than the disease?
Right.
And, you know, certainly with any kind of drug, I mean, in even I'm talking drugs that are over-the-counter drugs like a vitamin, can have untoward effects in the body. And, you know, there were some rare side effects with the mRNA. Young men in particular were susceptible to myocarditis. That's an inflammation of the heart. Most of those people recovered without any kind of long-term issues, at least that they detected in that period that they were studying it. And then there were blood clots associated with the adenovirus vector vaccines, meaning the vaccines that were built not on mRNA, not on the nucleic acid, but actually on the actual pieces of the virus. So Johnson & Johnson. But again, those were rare and typically non-fatal. And they're continuing to surveil for bad outcomes. So there's a lot of people that fit into that category of oddball stuff. Mm-hmm. They just create a huge bucket of symptoms, like you said, the dizziness, the vertigo, body aches, joint aches, feeling unwell, feeling lightheaded, weak, weird, my heart was racing. You know, and it's hard to know. Was it the vaccine? Were you also fighting a virus at the time? You know, were you dehydrated? Who knows?
Yeah, my heart was racing too.
I think it's probably real, and I think again, it just comes down to on an individual level, what are you more comfortable with? And I think a lot of us who were seeing people if affected by the disease were saying, you know what, I'm good with that. I don't want any part of this. I don't want any part of this. I'm going to take my chances with this vaccine, and I'm not going to lie to you, Jim. I had my doubts, and I was a little wary when I first got it because I knew that this did not fit the same kind of scrutiny.
Right.
It couldn't fit the same kind of scrutiny.
Right.
Right. They're just you were at a point where we were taking enormous losses. 1 million people died. That's a lot of folks. And I just, you know, I had seen colleagues go down. I knew an emergency medicine doc who ended up in the ICU and dead. And so I just thought, you know what, I'm gonna opt for this. I know there's some risk, but I think there's probably a lot of benefit.
Yeah.
So ultimately, it's hard to answer your question. I think there probably are a lot of side effects, and it's going to take a long, long time before we truly understand the ramifications. That being said, at this point, it's easy for me to tell my kids, my wife, my family, my parents, go ahead and get the vaccine. It's safe for you.
Yeah. We're talking to Dr. Jeremy Sover, who is the medical director of emergency medicine at Northwestern Medicine at Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Sover, before we leave this topic, I was just as ironically, I had sent you this little message to say I'd like to talk about this today. And then as I was continuing to do a little research, I saw another story, somewhat connected to this, that there was some study done after 12 years. That's why I was asking you about the, you know, the time that it takes to do some, you know, get some real data as we begin to now study these things. After 12 years, they did a 12-year study that showed that the shingles vaccine may help people prevent or either stave off heart disease and dementia initially. Even though you're getting the shot for shingles, did you see that?
Yeah, that was it was multiple studies done in different countries, the UK, South Korea, and the US, that those who received the vaccine had a 15-30% lower risk of dementia, interestingly, the protective effect seems stronger in people vaccinated at an older age. And the question is why is that the case? And I think there's a couple of things. One is they think the vaccine may reduce systemic inflammation. And they don't get into the reasons and the rationale for that. But the other reason that makes sense is that you have a lower reactivation of that virus that causes shingles. Keep in mind, shingles is a reactivation of a virus that you obtained years ago. So it's a herpes virus, and I'm not just talking about the sexually transmitted disease, but there are many herpes viruses that are just like every other virus. You pick them up, you might have a cold sore at one point in your life, it's probably a herpes virus. And so then what happens is that herpes virus then regresses, your immune system fights it off, but it doesn't leave. It's the gift that keeps on giving. It essentially camps out, if you will, in your in a place in your essentially in your nervous system, right alongside your spinal cord, where it just sits there, and it's the part of your spine, the nerves that kind of generate sensation, that sense. When it reactivates. And typically it's when you're older, when your immune system is starting to become weakened, and then you have some kind of inciting event. It could be another virus. It could be a stress event. It could be any number of things. And then it kind of jumps back into action and reactivates and causes that nasty, painful red rash on one side, typically on one side of your body, in the distribution of that sensory nerve. And it's extremely painful, and it can actually be debilitating, not just from pain, but it can get into your cornea and your ear, and it just, it's nasty. this vaccine essentially triggers or keys your immune system to look out for that and tamp it down immediately. At any rate, that the reactivations are thought to play a role in that cognitive decline that occurs with some of these neurologic diseases like dementia. So that, in combination with reducing inflammation in general, they think is what's leading to that decreased risk of dementia.
Do we sometimes, is this a common thing, like you were saying about, you know, the COVID vaccine and now like something like this? Do we often find that while initially, a vaccine was being developed to combat a specific ailment or disease, and while it might have some temporary benefits, it turned out that it wasn't good for that, but it turned out that it had medicinal results for something that they didn't even expect it to have, on another disease.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, the science is funny like that. You know, because the human body is so complex, and truly that song you learn as a kid, the knee bones connected to the thigh bone, everything in the body is interconnected. And so particularly with where the immune system is literally everywhere in your body, that you can have anti-inflammatory effects from some of these vaccines or even some medicines that are derived for one purpose and have an effect on the other. For instance, these GLP-1 inhibitors, Wegovy or Ozempic, for whatever reason, that they seem to be having some sort of anti-inflammatory effect. And so you're seeing that kind of pervasively in different parts of the body. So that long story short, yeah, there's often unintended both good and bad consequences of all of these medications or drugs.
Yeah, I have in my eye, I have something called a venal occlusion. Apparently a vessel popped, and so I actually get an injection in my eye frequently. And it turns out that the vaccine that I get was initially used because it flushes out the fluids that may be leaking into my eye so it won't damage my retina. But apparently this Avastin was something that was developed to combat tumors, and yet it didn't really have a really good effect on that. But then they realized, but wait a minute, it is kind of flushing out. It does have this ability to flush out, you know, blood or fluids, and so they use it for that.
Yeah, it is remarkable. You're right. Avastin was initially developed to try and stop tumor cells from developing blood supply, essentially to kind of block that blood vessel formation from happening. And now they're using it in all kinds of diseases of the eye, as you mentioned.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's always fascinating and informative to talk to you, Dr. Silver. So I appreciate taking your time, especially here on a Mother's Day. So please wish both your wife and your mom a happy Mother's Day. And hopefully we'll get a chance to talk soon. Enjoy the day. Thank you for taking time out.
Will do. Thanks, Jim. Have a good one.
Great. Jim Toronto with you here today, filling in for Dean Richards, taking a well-deserved break. Hopefully he's enjoying the beautiful day. And hopefully so are you. As it's Happy Mother's Day, gorgeous day in Chicago, and a celebratory day as well. So if your mom is around, either next to you or in your heart, always a special thing to keep her close to your heart and in your mind today, if she's here presently or if she's can still live on in your memories. Happy Mother's Day. Also, it's a day for celebration. I'm going to talk to Andy. I always enjoy talking to Andy about sports. But first, I have to celebrate you. Did somebody have a birthday yesterday, Andy?
Yeah, Jim Hickman, the former Chicago Cub. Bono had a birthday yesterday.
Good old number 28, Jim Hickman.
Bono had a birthday yesterday.
Oh, he still hasn't found what he's looking for.
No. Streets still have no name, too.
Hi-oh.
Yeah, I had a birthday yesterday.
Any big is it a number we want to talk about or no?
Yeah, it's big number 58.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
Savor these last 2 years, Andy.
That's what I keep hearing.
Believe me, you only think they're 2 years, but they're more than that.
Yeah, it goes by very quickly, doesn't it?
And that's six.
Yeah,
58 showed up fast, huh?
It did. Oh, yeah. Rearview mirror, boom, there it is.
20 turned out fast.
Right. Yeah. I used to try to celebrate the anniversary of my 21st birthday until it became the 21st anniversary of that 21st birthday.
I mean, now every story I tell now is 40 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, 30 to 40 years old. And half the time I'm telling it to somebody that isn't even that old.
Yeah. I've got my 40th high school reunion coming up this October.
Oh, God, I stopped going to those.
Yeah, so it's fun. Those are fun.
I always feel very paranoid now. This is, I don't know how you feel yet. I mean, you cast a very young image, Andy.
Well, thank you. I try.
Yeah, for sure.
Even though the numbers bespeak that.
Correct.
visually, you certainly cast a younger image. But I couldn't believe And I'm not giving anything away here. I can't believe they have cards. Like, you know, they have cards with numbers on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's okay. It's one thing if you turn 40. Okay, it's like this, that big, okay, you're an adult now, especially yeah. that adulting is a verb. I don't know why, but it is a verb now. I'm acting like an adult. Well, yeah, you know, you should. So 40, of course, is a milestone.
Right.
And then 50 is, and I remember when I was a young kid, if you had a 50th birthday, I mean, they threw parties at banquet halls.
Oh, yeah.
Because most likely you were only going to live another 5 years. You know, people didn't live till their 80s and 90s like they do now. And so if you reached 50, it was like, hey, good for you. You got a long life. Well, now 50 is almost kind of like, okay, whatever. And they have these cards that have the numbers, you know, 40, 50. But I can't believe people send you a card with a 60 on it.
It's just rude, isn't it?
Oh, my God.
Come on.
I was like, are you serious? I mean, I don't mind getting sent. If I can get a card with an 80 on it, I'll be happy. But I don't want one with 60 on it.
Yeah,
that looked, I was like, I went to the person at the card area in Mariano's, and I said, why is this here? Take this off. Get this out of here. But so that's good. So you're still in the, you could still pretend to be young.
Yeah, yeah.
But believe me, enjoy the next 2 years.
I'm going to do that.
And I'm going to have to get your home address, because guess which kind of card I'm going to send you in 2 years.
Yeah. Shouldn't those be more of a congratulatory card? Like, good job, you made it.
I guess. I don't know what it says. 60 is a weird, 60 is a weird age.
It's no man's land.
Yeah, it really is. You're not old. You're not, like I said, I usually just tell people now I'm and over.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you get to a certain age, you are blocked into that demographic of 55 and over.
Right.
So I just say I'm and over. So this way I don't have to tell my real age and still give you a sense of where I'm at. But anyway, yeah. Well, congratulations. I hope you had a good day yesterday.
Yeah, great day. Thanks.
So here's my question. Few things to talk about. Mm-hmm. I'm a holdover to some extent, showing my age. I'm not a degenerate gambler, but I've always enjoyed horse racing. I love watching it on television. And my dad used to take me to Arlington. He used to really like to go to Arlington. So that's where I got it. I'm not a big gambler, though, but I really enjoy, I just love horses. They're beautiful, majestic. I just love to go to the paddock and watch them walk around. And now, of course, it's hard to do that. I used to, I mean, my gosh, Arlington Park was such a beautiful racetrack after it was rebuilt. But so we had a Kentucky Derby a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
or last weekend, actually. And now there's news that the winner is not going to run in the Preakness.
That's the truth.
Sovereignty.
Yeah.
Now, I guess I would just like to get your take on this. This is happening more often.
Yeah.
Where we're not getting, you know, Triple Crown winners in general, but a lot of times, because the race is only the next race in the Triple Crown, the Preakness, is only 2 weeks after the Derby, because these horses are worth so many millions of dollars now, these trainers, they don't want to run the horse that quick.
That's your reason right there.
I mean, is that it? Is that the total reason?
Well, it's got to be. I mean, because these horses, as you point out, you know, the Triple Crown is one thing, and it's something that's not been done very often, and we know that. But is that going to make the horse that much more valuable? I mean, look, all the horses in the Kentucky Derby were descendants of secretaries.
Isn't that crazy?
That's the legacy, right? And that's why a horse is worth what a horse is worth. And rather than try to you know, finish fifth or sixth or something like that in a Preakness Stakes, which is a different kind of a race too for that horse, they sit him out and it'll give them time to recover and then go for the Belmont Stakes. And, you know, as Meatloaf said, two out of three ain't bad. Right. And you still get your money for stud.
Yeah, I feel sorry because, you know, I mean, if you think about horse racing, especially here in the Chicago and Illinois area, I mean, horse racing in the 70s and 80s, and even the 90s to some extent, it started to seem to fall down. But in the 70s and before that, obviously, but in the 70s and 80s, it was still a vibrant sport in this city.
Oh yeah, Hawthorne, Maywood, Sportsman's,
Balmoral, all the, you know, Maywood. Yeah, I mean, I live close to Maywood now. That's gone. You know, that's a Costco. Well, no, Kittyland is a Costco. Now it's an Amazon facility.
Okay,
but my point is, so I guess while I'm not a big horse racing fan per se, I don't follow it on a regular basis. But when the Triple Crown comes around, it does excite me.
Yeah.
I remember watching Secretariat win the Triple Crown in 73 and watching him just destroy the competition in the Belmont.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I feel sorry that, you know, here's the one time when people can pay attention to racing. And now some of the sheen is gone, you know, because we already know now that these next two races don't really, I mean, they'll be exciting and they're fun to watch, but they don't really have the meaning of the possible Triple Crown.
No. And, you know, all these scandals with trainers and with drugging and with doping, and it really kind of put a black cloud a little bit over the sport of kings, as they say. And, you know, I don't know if the interest is as high, but I agree that I think with the three races that kind of stick their heads out above the clouds, people will pay attention to those and will bet them for whatever reason, entertainment purposes or anything else. But it just doesn't have the same zip, I don't think, as it used to.
Now, do you think that, I understand, from what I understand, unlike baseball or football that has a commissioner, the horse racing industry is very loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
There isn't like one
governing
body.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you think that when you start to see, I mean, you know, once is a coincidence, but two times is a trend. And from what I understand, this is about the fourth or fifth time since 2019 that the Derby winner has not run the Preakness. So I'm just wondering, do you think that the horse racing industry would be smart to perhaps space these out so you have the Kentucky Derby in May, the Preakness in June, and the Belmont in July, and then you could spread out interest over the whole summer too?
Yeah, it would make sense. I mean, that's probably why it's not being done, because it would make sense. And you know, I don't know if there's ever been a push for you know, one single governing body over horse racing, and you know, you'd have to classify what these races are. I mean, these are level A races as opposed to level B races, and how do you regulate how many races a horse needs to run to get in to qualify for this, to qualify for that? I mean, they have their own qualifications now, and that's how you get the field of horses that you do for these Triple Crown races. But I don't know. I mean, I think that they probably enjoy a little freedom and a little freedom to kind of try to not skirt the rules, but you know, at least push to the very edges of the rules of the sport. And some have been busted. You know, I mean, Bob Baffert's his reputation has been dinged quite a bit over the last few years with allegations and proof in some cases of doping.
This was his first year back at the at the Derby for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a texter today at 630 that says it's animal abuse, and to some extent that I think is another reason why horse racing perhaps has lost its
luster,
its charm.
Left on,
yeah. You mentioned the doping and the fixing and all this other stuff, but a lot of people do look at. In fact, I just saw that the winner of the race, I believe, the jockey got fined $30,000 because he whipped the horse more than five or I don't. There's a certain amount of time that you can. I guess they're trying to cut down on this animal abuse that this texter brings up. So apparently there is only a certain amount of times that you can use the whip, I think, in the stretch, right before the end. And I guess he went one over whatever the limit is, either five or six. And so he was, even though he won the race, he was fined $30,000 because they rewatched the film and they saw him hit the horse an extra time. So I thought that was interesting. At least they're trying to do something. I mean, it's a difficult, you know, it's like you're taking the tackling out of football. I mean, you know, so, you know, you can argue that football is human abuse then, right? I mean, if you really want to start to get technical.
Well, that's of their free will, so that's.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I get that. Well, we're talking to Andy Mazur about sports. We'll talk about Da Bears after this, so stick right where you're at here at 7:20 a.m. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Tirano, Elton Jim, filling in for Dean Richards this morning. Happy Mother's Day. We're talking to Andy Mazur about sports. Before, I just want to, I'm a stickler for truth and details. And so I was wrong. Not only was the junior Alvarado get fined, but he apparently got fined $64,000. He whipped the horse. I think you're allowed 8 times, and he hit it 10 times, and he also did it within 10 days or something like that. But he got fined $64,000. So at least the horse racing world is trying to cut down on some of the necessary evils, I guess, of the sport. So here we are. The season ended dismally. The Chicago Bears went from being the pariah of sports for about 6 weeks toward the end of last year and early this year. The McCaskies were completely being just attacked by the media and by fans. And within 40 seconds, they changed all the negativity by hiring Ben Johnson.
Yeah. Well, you might say they did something, too, that kind of showed you a little bit of maybe a little bit of forward thinking by the organization. They had never in the history of the Chicago Bears ever fired a coach in season.
Right. Yeah.
And it was so egregious to the point where they had nothing. They had nowhere else to go but to fire Matt Eberflus after that debacle in Detroit on Thanksgiving Day.
Oh, God.
That was one of many situations that were both fireable offenses.
Well, Washington. Remember the Washington game?
Well, that's just a joke. I mean, you got to give the McCaskey family and the Bears front office a little tip of the cap for what's gone on since that point. I mean, yeah, they beat Green Bay at the end of the year, which was awesome to see because, obviously that means a lot to Bears fans, and it should because it's the Packers, for goodness sakes. And then it looked from the outside, and I was critical of this because it looked from the outside that they had no clue what they were doing as far as the interview process, because they brought in like 17 or 18, 20 people, but they had their main people in mind. And from what you read now, Ryan Poles was really doing his due diligence and really did his homework and really had this thing well under control, knowing exactly who they wanted. So, while Washington took away that Hail Mary, they actually gave the Bears Ben Johnson because they eliminated the Lions from the playoffs in a weird win for the Commanders behind Jaden Daniels. And Ben Johnson has kind of breathed some life into that organization again. I really feel that the McCaskies did what they had to do. They paid for their coach. And now it's up to Ben Johnson to put that money into effect here and to get out of the football field and get the best out of these guys. And win some football games, because that's what you're ultimately judged on, is how many football games you win.
The only thing that I would question, and I agree with everything, and I think that there's no question Ben Johnson's pedigree and what he did at Detroit is very impressive. So hopefully the Bears can give him the type of players in order to implement his kind of offensive ideas. So there's no question. And they've got Caleb Williams, which is certainly a capable and promising quarterback. I guess the only thing that surprised me, I mean, I know that Ben Johnson was the name, but at the same time, for 6 weeks, everybody complained, just as you were saying, about the process. And they've got this process of hiring these glorified coordinators and assistants without any previous head coaching experience is obviously not working. Mm-hmm. We've got to try something different. And at the end of the day, if you look at it just from a statistical standpoint, Ben Johnson is no different in terms of his qualifications, in terms of being an untested head coach, a coordinator, than Eberflop or Trestman or anyone else. I know he was the marquee name, but didn't the Bears basically stick to their philosophy?
No, because here's the thing. They saw a guy that not only led an offense, but they also saw a man that led an offense. And I know that sounds like I'm saying the same thing, but I'm saying that, yes, he was the head of the offense, but he also was the leader. And these guys would go through a brick wall for this human being. And I think now he has a chance to get a whole entire football team behind him like that. And there's something about Ben Johnson and about the personality and about the way he attacks his job that says, okay, yeah, this guy is probably the best candidate and is the most likely to succeed. But again, they do not hand out a Vince Lombardi trophy for when you win the offseason. And the Bears thought they won the offseason last year.
Right.
And we all were very happy going into the season. You know, we're cautiously optimistic because, you know, we're here in Chicago about what this football team will do once the curtain goes up on the season. The schedule comes out later this week on May 14th. But, you know, looking at the possibilities and some retreads and some old philosophies and old ideas to bring in a young guy, 38 years old, who is familiar with the division, familiar with how to run an offense, which is something the Bears have never seen in the history of the game, and since Sid Luckman, perhaps. And that's way back in the way back machine. They've never had a 4,000-yard passer. That's going to change this year. I really feel like that's going to change. There's weapons behind Caleb Williams, and I like the direction. I don't know if it'll translate into a bunch of wins in a division-winning season this year, but it's certainly going to trend up.
Well, from what I read, the organized team activities start on May 20th.
May 20th, you said, yep.
Yeah, I think there's rookie minicamp going
now. Wrapping up today.
And then on June 3rd, which is less than a month away now, we start full squad minicamp.
You got that right. It's right
so
around the corner.
If you're waiting for the Bears, your wait won't be that much longer. Time is flying by. Thanks, Andy. I appreciate it. Billy Joel, Lullaby. Played that song at my mom's funeral. And still tear up every time I hear it. Jim Tirano filling in for Dean Richards today. Happy Mother's Day. We celebrate this day only once a year, but we should celebrate it 365 days a year. And so what I was hoping is that I know that it's not popular much anymore for people to call in to a radio show. Everybody loves texting. I would love to hear some memories or stories about your mom. When I say your mom to you, what comes to mind? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? 312-981-7200. If you want to share some memories or wish your mom a happy Mother's Day today, I'd love to do that because it really is a special day. I'm one of the reasons I even agreed to do this show today was Mother's Day, obviously. And although my mother has passed away, I still have my mother-in-law, Barb Phillips, who I love dearly. And so I wanted to make sure it was okay with her that because we had some loose plans today, and I wanted to make sure it was okay. And she was kind enough, as she always is, to say, no, you do that radio thing. So that was that. My Mother's Day gift to her is a huge thank you. And hopefully, and she gave me a gift today by letting me do this show. But I just wanted to say, you know, if there's something that comes to your mind, a funny story or a memory that you have about your mom, whether she's with us today still or she's passed on, I'd love to hear some of those. I was, you know, just to get the ball rolling, I remember as a little kid, I was running across the street and my mom grabbed me. I had tripped, and my mom grabbed me, and a car stopped right at my head. I remember seeing the tire. I was a little kid, and it was very scary, but I remember my mom just jumping and grabbing me, and I will always remember that. It was purely a motherly, loving instinct, and wow. She also took me, and a happier note, she took me to my first Elton John concert. When I was 12 years old, little did she know at that time that I would go to 215 or 214 more.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, you don't know about me, do you there, Rob?
I do not. That's a lot of Elton John concerts.
Yeah. Well, that's why I'm called Elton Jim. Yeah. No, I'm a scary, scary fan. Although I didn't go. Elton just performed a couple days ago in San Diego at a benefit show that he did at Petco Park in San Diego. And I was tempted to go, but then I had this. And I just want to make sure with flights that I would get back. So once again, dedication to the show here. But yeah, so she took me to my first Elton show, and I will always remember that.
Where was it?
It was right here at the Chicago Stadium. 1976 in one of his biggest tours. And yeah, the stadium is gone. My mom is gone, but Elton and I are still around.
Nice.
So, and also, I should say that back in the late 90s, I hosted a weekend entertainment-based show on another radio station. And on Mother's Day, I had my mom come in, and she co-hosted the show with me.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was very, I mean, it's a great memory. I've got pictures. My mom was very outgoing. If I have a gift of gab, I definitely inherited it from her, if I have it. Right. Yeah. Okay, Jim. What do you mean, if? And she was a pro. She actually worked earlier in her life. She actually worked at ABC Television here in the traffic department, meaning the commercial, not the traffic with cars. And she actually, at one time, from what I understand, she actually hosted a show very briefly. So I had no idea of that until much later in her life. So I guess this was in the blood. But so I had a chance to have her as my co-host, and she didn't miss a beat. She was great. So I just have so many more great memories, but I just thought I would I'd pass a few of those. Why don't we go to line one here? Is that Kenneth?
Hey, how are you?
How you doing?
Good to hear you. I'm doing well. Well, my mom's still alive. She's 90.
Nice.
And she just passed her driver's test. So be careful, everybody. I know.
Yeah, what? Yeah. I know. Could you give us her license plate and the make of car she's in so we can get to the next lane?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, most people have, you know, a relationship with an attorney or a doctor. My mom has a relationship with a body man at an auto shop. So, yeah, it's all just little minor things now and then. But, I mean, the greatest memory I have of my mom still exists. I mean, just an absolute greatest cook in the world. The greatest. I learned everything about cooking
great.
From my mom.
Nice.
And I remember one time when I got four sisters and me, and we were screwing around in church, and my mom said, "Oh, you're having fun? I just keep doing it. Yeah, keep it up. Keep it up." And we thought she was telling us to keep it up. So we screwed around all through Mass. We got home. We got chased around the house with the wooden spoon. I don't know if you...
The big spoon and fork.
Right. The wooden spoon. But, yeah, she's a great lady. She's got a mind like a 16-year-old. She's gets around, and she's just...
What about... So woman. You said she's a great cook. What's the favorite dish that she cooks that you love the best?
Well, we're German, so she makes spatula and she makes remoulade, and I mean, that takes a lot of time.
Yeah,
I
love that spätzle. Is that spätzle you're talking about?
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's basically it's kind of like a noodle kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's almost like a German gnocchi, if you will.
There you go.
Yeah, but I love that stuff. Yeah. Well, congratulations, and will you see your mom today?
No, actually, she's down at ISU for my niece's graduation, so I'll see her next weekend.
Well, happy Mother's Day to you and your mom. Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Jim.
We've got Nick here on the line. Nick, happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, well, thank you. You too. yeah, and happy Mother's Day to all the moms.
I mean, people have called me a mother, but I don't know if it's the right connotation.
We don't want to go that far.
No.
But yeah, talking about the driving, I'm 75. I still have a valid CDL Class A summer truck license, and I have a driving award too. Yeah, for real, I do. I renewed it about a year ago. You have a good driving record. You pass the eye test, and I didn't say anything. I was waiting for them to say you're too old, so I really give you a regular license. No, they approved it, and I guess it's okay. Yeah. If you see me, you won't see me driving on the roads because I'm retired for 12 years now. So people who are getting a little bit of a chest pain, you don't have to worry about me. I have a driving award, too. But mine it doesn't say safe driving. It just has a minus in front of it, minus this, minus 2 years, minus 6 months. I don't understand it, but maybe that's why I'm not driving anymore. I was going to say about mom, God bless the moms out there. Almost all of them sacrificed for us. And all. My mom's been dead for a long time. I'm 75. And the longer I still live, the more I can see, and as I can remember it, that she cut back on things for herself. She wore sometimes some what looked like shabby clothing, you know, because as you're growing up, especially, you need like a new pair of shoes because you're getting bigger, or a new pair of clothing, set of clothing. And, you know, the sacrifices there. In nature, that's the way it is also with wanting the young to be independent and be able to make it on their own. You know, the parents know in nature, different birds, animals, they can't be there taking care of the kid, except in some rare human cases, you know, when they're 45 years old living in a basement. But anyhow, but you want them to be independent. You want to make it on their own and be able to live out their lives so that the parents know when they're gone someday, you'll be able to survive. So yeah, I just look back that I didn't realize that when I was growing up, and the corrections and do this, don't do that, don't hang out
right
that crowd or whatever, something like that. You know, you build up the resistance, the independence, the defiance, the rebellion to things, you know. But once it's all over, in other words, when let's say in this case the mother is dead, you realize that, oh, man, I screwed up here and I screwed up.
Right.
I was nicer here. And you know, it's too late for me. But I tell people, as I was talking not long ago to a younger person, I said, it's too late for me. But, you know, maybe you can just try to think about it. You know, I'm sure your mother's thinking, he wasn't saying anything to me that my mom was no good or something like that. No. But he sort of looked at me like, yeah, I never thought of it that way, you know. So I'm just hoping people will think, and remember, I'm not driving in the semi-truck anymore, so don't worry, you know. Nope. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Nick. Well, like I said earlier in the show, too, my mom passed away. It'll be 19 years this year, and like Nick is saying, giving some advice to some people, because as time goes on, especially if you've lost your mom, you do, just as Nick said, you do start to think and learn, and you realize, wow. And as I've said this many times to people who lose a parent, especially a mom, I always say the same thing, and I will repeat it again. I never get tired of saying it. Because it is so important to me. Please, as I said, if your mom is still around and you have the opportunity, look her in the eyes. Just look her in the eyes, because there is no love like that. And so just do that, please. Sorry. I've got a text here that says, my little Irish mom could feed a family on six on 2 potatoes and 1 pound of ground steak, and we would think it was the best gourmet meal we ever made. That's nice. That's from 847. From 773, it says, my mom died about 6 years ago. I miss her dearly. Her attitude and goofiness was just like Lucille Ball in the show that was on TV. My mom actually worked at a chocolate factory, and she put cherries inside the chocolate. So not only was your mom like Lucille Ball, she was actually living out Lucille Ball's most famous episode. And I also would tell moms, because my mom was a great letter writer, and especially later in her life, she wrote me many letters, almost after I got married. I wasn't living at home anymore. I was an only child. So we had a really close relationship, and so she used to write me letters. And I'll tell you, a phone call is great and things like that, but don't underestimate moms writing your child or children letters, because I still have those letters. It's in her handwriting. They are beautiful letters. They are loving letters. I read them for inspiration. She sent a beautiful card on Christmas of 2003, which I still put in our Christmas tree as a great Christmas memory. So I'll tell you, moms, don't underestimate. I know in today's world we're texting and we're doing, but you know, for those moms who can still know, you still know how to cursive write, believe me, it means something. And those letters will last lifetimes, and they will become keepsakes. So it may seem to you like a quick little note and not a big deal. Believe me, I've got a file of them and I still read them.
I was going to ask, did she have great penmanship?
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she had. Yeah, I mean, because back then, that everybody actually used to write cursive.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, now today, hardly anyone does. I mean, I think they're not even.
They don't even teach it anymore.
Yeah, teaching it anymore. So, yeah, believe me. Well, and even if you send it and you type it, but something tangible that letter with print on it, whether it's handwritten or typed out, whatever you want to do. But believe me, that that letter will have meaning years and years and years. Another text here, 773, says, my mom will be 90 years old on June 4th, and we still dance in our backyard. How nice is that? Oh, my mom was a dancer. She came from that era. She was a little older when she had me. She was actually in her early 40s, and I was an only child. And so she used to hang out at the Aragon Ballroom and the Paradise Ballroom, and she even had her picture in the newspaper one time. She was dancing with some guy. Wasn't my dad, but she wasn't married yet. And there's a picture of her dancing. God, did she love to dance. I should mention my name. Her name is Lorraine. I miss you so much, Mom. Here's Eric on the phone. Eric, happy Mother's Day. Is Eric there?
Oh, I'm here. I thought I lost you.
Yeah.
Sorry. My mom, she's been gone for about 5 years, and I'm an undertaker for a living, so I deal with people who, you know, lose their moms quite frequently. My mom was just like Aunt Clara from Bewitched. And
Sammy.
Yeah, it's like, Mom, okay, you got to turn the doorknob before you open the door. Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. And but at any rate, she was a very sweet person. And you were talking about handwriting, and that's one of the first things I noticed. She passed away from dementia. She used to have beautiful penmanship. And I noticed, you know, when she was widowed, that her penmanship was starting to go. And I, you know, that's what kind of sparked me to, you know, take her to the doctor and get treated for Alzheimer's and dementia. However, you're spot on when you say that it's so important to not only stay in contact with your mom, but meaningful contact, because I deal with so many people who have regrets that, you know, it's the woulda, coulda, shoulda, and my mom was the greatest person in the world, and I wish I was there for her. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, sending text messages. It's just not as personal as seeing someone's penmanship on a card.
Yeah, and there's no question about that. Yeah. Like I said, thank you, Eric. I appreciate that. You had some great things. And I would imagine that in your job, wow, what a tough job that is. You're constantly dealing with grief and people in such a vulnerable position, and you've got to be a special person to be able to comfort them. So you're doing some great work there. I remember good old Eric the Undertaker from the good old Gary Meyer afternoon show days. Good to hear from you, Eric. I appreciate it. Jim Toronto here with you, filling in for Dean Richards today. Happy Sunday. Happy Mother's Day. We've been talking about Mother's Day, sharing some people's thoughts about their moms on this special day, both through text and telephone calls. Nice to hear people's voices, especially since this is an audio medium. It's nice when people actually call in, but that's okay to text. I get it. In fact, a couple more texts here from 815. It says that this person says that their mom is in hospice, but he's looking forward. I don't know if it's a man or a woman. Sorry. But they're looking forward to seeing her tonight and spending time with her. It's going to be incredible. I just want to talk all night, and I'm going to videotape it. Thank you so much. You know what? That's a great idea, because I did this as well. My mom wasn't sick or anything at the time, but I, you know, she was a little older. You know, like I said, she had me a little older. Because she ultimately had, you know, dementia and Alzheimer's. But this was years before that. I interviewed her. I did an interview on videotape. And Bob Green had a book out at one time, the reporter Bob Green, about questions to ask your parents so that you can get a background on their lives and your family history and things like that. And I did use that, and it was very helpful. But once again, and we're in a time here where now everybody has, I mean, I had to get a video camera at that time, right? But now we have this amazing technology right in our hands. You know, just fill up your phone with video of your mom and just save it and ask her questions and find out. There's so many questions I have now as I get older about our family or things like that, and the resource is gone. So that is a great idea, to videotape your mom and dad, to have that record, because once again, it lives on with you, believe me. I do want to say, too, we always talk about Mother's Day, but I mentioned earlier, we should not forget mothers-in-law. And I am fortunate enough to have one. And I'll tell you, you only know who your real friends or family are when you are in the toughest of times. Those people really step up. And I have to say, as I said, my wife and I were caregivers for my mom the last 3 years of her life. She had heart ailments, and then she wound up getting dementia and Alzheimer's, and she was living with us, and it was a very difficult time. Anybody who's been a caregiver, you know the difficulty in that. And throughout that period, my mother-in-law, Barb, was so was just so kind. She gave us a break every so often, and she would watch my mom, and my wife and I would be able to go out of town or just get a weekend alone to because it, the situation was so stressful on a daily basis. And it was, she used to really just take care of my mom, and it, once again, it meant so much to me. So let's not forget mothers-in-law today, too, because I've got a great one. Anyway, I'm sorry for getting so emotional, but it is it is Mother's Day, and I'm trying to hang in there.
Very genuine.
I believe me, it is.
Yeah, you can tell.
But, yeah, I appreciate that. So happy Mother's Day, Mom. And at the end, a little later in the show, we want to. I want to hear from some moms about what you love about Mother's Day. So we're going to turn the tables. It's always the children talking about their moms, but what do moms appreciate about Mother's Day? We'll talk about that a little later. We've got a new pope, the pope, a Chicago pope, a U.S. pope. Wow. Pope. You know, everybody was talking about the film Conclave, which came out late last year, won some awards with Ralph Fiennes. Excellent movie. John Lithgow. Really just a good movie in terms of you know, the storyline and things like that. Didn't see the twist coming. I hope I didn't, spoiler alert, I hope I didn't ruin it for people who haven't seen it. But, I mean, when do we get a spoiler alert here? I mean, it's May. The movie came out in, like, September or October. If you haven't seen it by now, is 9 months enough? Can I talk about anything? Oh, come on, I haven't seen it yet. Well, that's not my fault. But anyway, apparently even some of the cardinals, and even apparently Pope Leo, before when he was just Cardinal Robert, watched Conclave, because for many of these cardinals, Francis named 80% of the cardinals, many of them within the last couple of years. So none of them had ever taken part in a conclave. And some of them watched the film to just get a little background into the realities of the process. And you know, I have a podcast here on WGNradio.com, and I talked about the conclave a few weeks ago. And hopefully, even if you're not Catholic, I don't know. I mean, like I said, having been born and raised Catholic, I was certainly drawn to it, even though I'm not a practicing Catholic, but I was still drawn to the traditions of it. And it was really... We have so few shared moments anymore. Everybody does their own thing. They watch their own shows. They time shift. They watch things on their phones. Nobody is really, we have so few shared moment events. Maybe the Super Bowl is one of the few remaining ones. It used to be the Academy Awards, but even the Academy Awards aren't as popular as they used to be, as people are now watching movies not at theaters, in home. They're not seeing, they don't have a connection to the films that are nominated, because people aren't going to have that communal experience in theaters. And so even the Oscars have lost a lot of their luster, because we don't have as many shared memories. This, to some extent, from a newsworthy event and a traditional event, I don't know. Hopefully, you know, with I mean, there's so many. As I said earlier, no one does pageantry like the Catholic Church. And I was an altar boy. I can tell you, I remember one of the best things about being an altar boy back when I was one was we still rang the bells. For those of you that are not Catholic, at the Catholic Mass, the priest would hold up the Eucharist and the chalice when he was consecrating the bread and wine. And when I was an altar boy, when the priest would raise the host on the blessing and raise the chalice, we would ring the bells. So he'd say, you know, just so you know how many times I went to Mass and served as an altar boy, I still remember this. When supper was ended, he took the cup. Again, he gave you thanks and praise, gave the cup to his disciples and said, take this, all of you, and drink from it. This is the cup of my blood, the blood of the new and everlasting covenant. It will be shed for you and for all men so that sins may be forgiven. Do this in memory of me. Okay, now that was off the top of my head there, folks. I didn't have a script on that. And then you'd ring the bells. And then, you know, and when he raised the host, you'd say that you'd ring the bells too. And that was such a cool effect. I remember before I became an altar boy, as a little kid going to church, and I was small, and, you know, the altar was far up there, so you could barely even see over the pews. And I remember hearing those bells ring when the chalice and the host were lifted. And I mean, I didn't know that the altar boy was ringing the bells. And I was like, holy cow, this is crazy. I mean, it was like magic. Then, of course, you know, I got to see how the magic was done. And then I became the magician as an altar boy. And I got to actually ring the bells. And when you were an altar boy, like there were two altar boys at the time. I was the time before there were servers. We were just boys. There was, you know, that was the time. And it was just boys that did it. And we used to like flip a coin, like who gets to ring the bells? That was a big deal. But, you know, anyway, I was watching Conclave, and I was also thinking there's another film that was just on again last night. In fact, I saw it on Sci-Fi, and I was trying to tell people about this a few weeks ago. Well, Conclave is actually, you know, very much, you know, obviously dedicated to the entire process. There's another film with Tom Hanks that came out in 2009, directed by Ron Howard, called Angels and Demons, written by Dan Brown, who also wrote The Da Vinci Code. And this book came before The Da Vinci Code, but the movie came after it because The Da Vinci Code became such a huge phenomenon in the film that then Dan Brown's work became much more prominent. And so they made this film after the Da Vinci Code film, even though the Angels and Demons book was written before the Da Vinci Code. And it also has a very strong plot about the conclave, and it gives you some insights to that. So you might want to, if you're into this Pope mania and this conclave mania, certainly see the new movie Conclave with Ralph Fiennes. But check out Angels and Demons, because that does give some interesting insights into it as well. Some great performances. There's an actor named Armin Mueller-Stahl. He was on The West Wing and X-Files, also in a film called Night on Earth. He's a German guy, very, very deep, deep German kind of accent. But he plays the head of the College of Cardinals. Really, really an intense portrayal. It's almost worth seeing that movie just for him. So, yeah, check out Angels and Demons. And then, even though it gets a bad rap, The Godfather 3, which, admittedly, it was not as good as the first two. But there is also side plot and some kind of palace intrigue about the Pope and the conclave there as well. So you might want to check out Godfather Part 3 if you haven't seen that. That came out in 1990. And then back in the 60s, there was a film with Anthony Quinn called The Shoes of the Fisherman, which is another story about a pope, a priest who becomes an unlikely priest who becomes the pope. So if you want to get, if suddenly you've gotten into Pope mania over the last couple of weeks with the conclave and everything like that, you might want to check out those movies because they do give you some different perspectives and, you know, different insights on things. I don't know if you, as I said, I was up at 4 a.m. watching all this stuff because there was a 7-hour difference between here and Italy. And I don't know if anybody noticed it, Now, I'm not saying anything bad, and especially there's no question now, you know, Cardinal Supich here in Chicago, he's got to be the grand master of Cardinals. His hometown, the diocese of which he is the head of, is the home of the Pope. So suddenly, Cardinal Supich has become a media star unto himself. I mean, when he was on the balcony, when they announced Habemus Papam, we have a Pope, and then Pope Leo came out, they showed all the cardinals lined up on the balcony outside of St. Peter's Basilica, and Cardinal Supich was right in the front, and he had an ear-to-ear smile because he knows that the Pope is coming to Chicago sometime. There's no question the Pope is going to have to come to Chicago, his hometown. And so he had to have been just ecstatic. And the irony is, I saw some interviews with Cardinal Supich before the conclave, and he was almost definitive in saying, you know, of all the potential candidates, who might it be? Because this was his first conclave. Who do you think is going to be the, you know, the leading contenders? And he said, well, what I do know is it's not going to be a Pope from the U.S. Oops. if he has any picks on football or basketball or baseball, don't take them. He's not very good at predicting. But I have to say, so I'm watching the beginning of the procession of the Cardinals. They're walking into the Sistine Chapel. As I said, my wife and I have gone to Italy a couple of times, and the Sistine Chapel is, you can't even describe it. Between the Michelangelo frescoes on the ceiling and then that painting that you, if you watched any of the coverage, you saw the painting on the wall right behind the altar called The Last Judgment with that blue background, also by Michelangelo. Just a... awe-inspiring. That even if you're not religious, if you're an atheist, you can go to Rome and be impressed and almost become spiritual just because of the majesty of the, this art and this architecture and the images that are portrayed. I mean, don't forget, you've got Michelangelo's Pietà, which is the famous sculpture with Mary holding the dead body of Jesus. That's just right there in the, you know, when you walk into St. Peter's, this amazing work of art just sitting right there. So much by some of the great masters, Caravaggio and Bernini and things like that. But the cardinals were walking into the Sistine Chapel, and before the conclave starts, they have to give an oath. They pledge an oath. If they do it in Latin, and they put their hand on the gospel, I think it was the Gospel of St. Mark, and they give this oath about that they're going to, you know, take the power of the Holy Spirit. I don't know. It was in Latin. I don't speak Latin. But I had to laugh. So I'm watching this procession, and 133 cardinals have to come in and do this. It was quite a long procession. And so there's Cardinal Supich, and he does it, you know, puts his hand on the book and he says it. And so everybody would finish and then they would turn. Let me see now. I'm trying to think. They would turn to their right to go back to their seat. And Cardinal Supich gave, you know, did his oath and he turned to the left. And then there was a guy there. We had the white lace surplice, it's called. And he stood there and he stopped Cardinal Supich and he pointed, oh, no, you got to go the other way. And Cardinal Supich put his head down. He looked so embarrassed. And I was like, oh, he went the wrong way. Now, don't worry about it, Cardinal, if you're listening. Only the entire world was watching. So I'm sure no one noticed. I'm just a stickler. So maybe I was the only guy who noticed. But, you know, it's one of those things where I'm sure he was so nervous. I mean, It's just human nature. And, you know, and I saw where he was sitting. It made sense for him to turn to his right because he was sitting over there. It would have been a quicker way, but I guess they wanted everybody to go the same way so there wouldn't be a traffic jam. But he just got done and he just turned instinctively to the wrong way. And then he was sort of pointed to the other way and he sort of put his head down and moved. And I was like, you know what? It's nice to see that even the Cardinal is human and can make a mistake. And now we remember him. Now I have a question too. Everybody here in Chicago calls Cardinal Blaise Supich, Cardinal Blaise Supich. Now, when I was an altar boy, once again, I went to a lot of masses. At that time, the head of the diocese here in Chicago was a guy named John Cody. And when they used to mention, because the name of the Pope and the Cardinal are mentioned within the liturgy, they would say, we want to thank Paul our Pope. This is back in the 70s. We want to, you know, our blessings from Paul our Pope. And he would say, John Cardinal Cody. Our bishop, the cardinal title was in the middle instead of in front. And what I've been hearing now over the last several years is we were saying Cardinal Francis George, Cardinal Joseph Bernardine, Cardinal Blaise Supich, and I was like, well, why was it John Cardinal Cody, but now suddenly it's Cardinal Joseph Bernardine or Joseph or Cardinal Francis George or Cardinal Blaise Supich. And I didn't really know why. When the cardinals were coming in to the procession, they were referred to with their first name, the cardinal, and their last name, the way I remember it from way back when I was an altar boy. So I'm liking Blaise Cardinal Supich. That's what I call him. Do we need to take a break? Let's take a quick break. Jim Toronto with you. Just doing some conclave. Just having some fun with the conclave. Poping, if you will. Filling in for Dean Richards here at WGN Radio, 720 AM. We'll be back after this. No switching. Happy Mother's Day. After the news at 11:30, we'll do another little Mother's Day segment. I'd like to hear from moms out there. What do you enjoy about Mother's Day? Are there any stories that you remember? You know, we always hear about kids talking about their mothers, but so often we don't get to hear a chance of mothers relating what has made them so happy about being a mom. And so you'll get your chance here. The phone number is 312-981-7200. That'll be after the news at 11:30. I've got a couple of texts here talking about, as I've been talking about, the conclave over the last couple of weeks. Another movie I mentioned, Angels and Demons, The Godfather Part 3, and Shoes of the Fisherman, all which have plots about the popes and the conclave. There's also a great film that I did forget that Texter 630 says. Another interesting papal movie is The Two Popes, yes, with Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Prince. Anthony Hopkins plays Benedict, and Jonathan Prince plays Pope Francis, and it talks about the idea when there were two popes here, when Benedict resigned for the first time in 600 years that a sitting pope resigned, and we had really two popes at one time. Very great acting and interesting take on that situation. What I was also taken by during the whole conclave process was everybody on television wanted it to be over quick. Oh, when is this going to be done? Oh, come on. You know, they just want to get in there and get, the food isn't good, at their place they're staying. They just want to get it over with. They want to get home. And I'm like, no. Just take your time. This is part of your job as a cardinal, and it's pretty important. So we don't, we have such a short attention span today. We build up great expectations for things, and then when they arrive, we just glance over them because we go running toward the next shiny object. Yes, this was kind of a relatively fast conclave, but I was just taken as to everybody was, well, when is the white smoke going to happen? I mean, come on already. It's like, geez, take a breath. Would it have been so bad if it would have happened on Friday? Could you imagine another extra day? I had a kick out of seeing the black smoke coming out of there. It makes the white smoke all the more fun. Whatever happened to anticipation? I don't know. Jim Toronto with you here on Mother's Day, Sunday, WGN 720 AM, filling in for Dean Richards. And speaking of mothers, Dean had and has such a special relationship with his mom as well. I got a chance to meet Dean's mom a few times. She would come to the Tree Time shows that we've done annually at Tree Time around the holidays, and his mom would come out until her health made it impossible. But boy, was she a favorite. And she would, one year she even made for the people that showed up at the Tree Time production, or at the remote where we're doing the show from, out on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. She made yogurt, Greek style yogurt, homemade Greek yogurt, and she passed it out to all the people in the audience. And she came a few times, and she was always a favorite. In fact, we used to always joke because Dave Schwann used to bring his father, and they were both widowers, and so we used to always joke that Schwanny and Dean's mom would get together, and that Schwanny's father was flirting with Dean's mom. But yeah, Dean, I was fortunate enough and honored, really, a couple of years ago. Dean invited my wife and I to a special memorial service for his mother after she passed away. She lived late into her 90s. I think it was 97 or 98. And but she sadly, she passed away during COVID. And so if you remember during that period, a lot of times people were not having very big gatherings for funerals because of the spread of the virus. But a couple of years later then, when things started to open up more, Dean had a beautiful service for his mom. And I was lucky enough, Randy was there too, and it was really a touching thing, and they showed beautiful pictures from her life, and people came up from the family and friends and told stories, and in fact, Dean's love of cooking, of which he's almost created a whole side hustle, if you will. Dean's side hustle is cooking now on WGN television, and that's clearly comes from from being with and cooking with and watching his mom cook all these authentic recipes. So happy Mother's Day to Dean Richards' mom as well. Even though I'm filling in for him today, I'm sure he's thinking about his mom, as we all should be today. What I wanted to say, I was sharing some stories earlier about my mom and I. We had some people call in. What I was hoping to do via the phones as well as the text as well is to hear from some moms. You know, we often hear on Mother's Day, you know, children giving thanks and giving memories, and we did that a little earlier. I thought it would be interesting to hear from moms. This is a chance for you to share some of your memories about perhaps Mother's Days, or just the entire motherhood experience. I always say that birthdays, I always think we have birthdays mixed up here, especially these days. We've become such a self-centered kind of narcissistic society, thanks to that smartphone. But I always think that birthdays should be a day that is celebrated for parents. It was their day. We don't remember anything about our birthday. They remember every detail of our birthday. When we were born, it was a life-changing, momentous event. They could tell you every minute, every detail. And it was them together that created this life. We take all the credit. Oh, it's my birthday. It's my birthday. But I think on birthdays, It's the parents who should be celebrated. It's their day. That event, that day. We didn't choose that day. We didn't do anything. Our parents did it all. We have no memories of that day. And so I would like to hear from some moms. If you've got some memories of special Mother's Days or perhaps just the whole motherhood experience that you've had. Let's go to line one. Who do we have? This is Susan. Hi, Susan.
Hey, how are you?
Very good. How are you doing? Happy Mother's Day. Are you a mom?
Thank you very much. So I just wanted to share with you that after many pregnancies that ended in a loss, I, at 29 years old, had a viable pregnancy, and I have two grown children now. But what I wanted to share is when I was younger, I never really thought about the miracle of how that all worked. It wasn't until I was in my 60s that I thought, wow, us women, we're incredible. We grow human beings in our body.
You are, and yeah, you are the source of life.
We are. And without us, bye-bye.
Right? Oh, so no, no.
It's a beautiful day. I'm very blessed. And thank you for allowing me to share that.
So just real quick, Susan. So even during labor, you didn't realize that you would be able to give life even during the labor situation? That didn't occur to you?
Oh, no. Hilarious. Hilarious. No. And then, right, and then having a second one. And the same thing, never realized
right.
it. But honestly, it took me to 60 years old to think, wow, we are freaking incredible.
Well, that's true. And you're never too old to learn something, right?
You're right. That goes to show you.
Okay.
So thank you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you, Susan. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you again. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to line two here. This is Adam. I don't think you're a mom. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Vera. I'm sorry.
Hi.
I'm sorry. Okay. I saw Adam. I didn't see what that. I'm sorry. So this is Vera. Happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. That's pretty funny because my eldest son is Adam. So
maybe are you using his phone?
No, I'm not. Well, you know what? I actually we're on a family plan. So yeah.
That yes. Came up well, that's why. Name. Yeah, that's why his name came up. Yeah. Okay.
That's pretty funny. My comment is that. My dad was of the same mind as you about the parents. My dad always, on our birthdays, and there were four of us, my dad always gave my mom roses
right.
on our birthdays. He said, you know, they did nothing to get here.
Exactly.
But, he thought of it as a birthing day, you know.
Yeah, good for your dad. That is exactly correct. I mean, I've always felt very weird about birthday parties for myself. I don't really have it. I don't really celebrate it because I'm like, you know, I didn't do anything. I just kind of,
yeah.
I mean, I didn't even have to push. I was just agitating.
You know? True, true.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's just that your birthday is because you've managed to not kill yourself.
Yeah, I guess, right. You've hung around that long. Well, thank you, Vera.
Right.
I appreciate that. Happy Mother's Day.
You're welcome.
And say hi
thank
to Adam
you
for us. Say hi to Adam. Who we got here? Laura, happy birthday. Or no, I'm sorry, happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. I'll take the happy birthday, too, even though my birthday is in March.
Oh, okay. Well, happy belated birthday.
Thank you. I actually decided to call as a in response to the first lady you called, who called in, because I have a slightly different story after trying to get pregnant and that not being successful. I adopted my son, and that is why marrying his father, with whom I adopted my son, is not the biggest mistake that I ever made in my life.
Yeah, we also
that was the saving grace is my son, and he is my everything, and he's about to turn 29 years old.
That's great. And so often, you know, we think about, you know, the natural mother parenthood. And a lot of times, exactly to your point, we overlook that there are so many adoptive families, and the love is no less strong and no less unconditional. And so I'm glad that you were able to add that to the mix here, because oftentimes we forget about that. People will talk about their labor or this, and it's important to remember that, especially in today's world, when you know, people, so many kids are looking for families. It's a great thing that you did.
You know, I'll tell you, Jim, my son has some special needs, and we both are convinced that we were absolutely meant to be together. Mm. We are a team, and I just got a chill when I said that. But
well, good for you.
It is a fact.
Well,
it is a fact.
You should get a chill, and you should get a round of applause. So a good happy Mother's Day, and it's a great thing that you did.
Well, it was great for me. Happy Mother's Day to you, too.
Thank you.
Thank
Laura.
You.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the one thing that is always kind of interesting, too, is, like I said before, and once again, do we have someone? No, that's the old one. When we're talking about moms and memories, it's a lot of times, you know, it's the things that we remember most are like the goofiest things. Someone earlier texted and said that their mom was like was goofy as Lucille Ball. And a lot of times it's the mishaps or the chaos that we remember most. But I have to tell you that if you take a step back, you will begin to remember some of those little stolen moments with your mom that will start to just ring in your ears. So today is a day, I think, for not only moms to celebrate, but for children to celebrate too, to take a little step back and to think about what kind of relationship you have had and what relationship you hopefully want to have continuing with your mom, regardless of how old you are. My mom, as I said, was at the time, especially when I was born, I was an only child, and I think she was at least 42 or 43. So that was very old at that point. Today, you know, that is something that, you know, more people are having older. We have better, you know, kind of health care and things like that. But when my mom had me, to be in your early 40s was very risky. But she said, "I wanted to have you." and so I'm glad she did. So mom, I share this day with you and all moms out there. Once again, if you want to share anything, what do you remember, or what are your memories about motherhood or on Mother's Day that you might want to share with us? 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break. Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards today. We'll be back after this. No switching. Jim Toronto with you here, filling in for Dean Richards at WGN 720 AM. Happy Mother's Day. We are celebrating Mother's Day today during this segment. Hearing from moms, what are some of their memories about Mother's Days, or what are their feelings about motherhood? And I just want to address a text that I got here. I was talking to a mom over in the last segment. She was talking about how she adopted a child, and she was talking about her experiences then. And I was saying, I said that we oftentimes overlook adoptive mothers in the thing. A lot of times we talk about natural. I didn't say, the texter here says adoptive mothers are not unnatural. I didn't mean that. I meant natural childbirth. I wasn't saying they're not unnatural. It's a great thing to adopt a child. So that was not, if I misspoke, I apologize. That was not my intention. Let me go to the phones here and say happy Mother's Day to Judy.
Hi.
How you doing?
I became a mother. A wonderful day. Good. I became a mother for the second time on Mother's Day. Our daughter was born 37 years ago on Mother's Day.
How did you work that out? Did you get a calendar out or what?
You know what? I had my pity party on Saturday that my baby wasn't here, and she just came through for me.
So that must be a double whammy then. It must be a really a neat day to celebrate her birthday and your Mother's Day, huh?
It is. Every 4 years, it aligns, and we celebrate in style.
Oh, very good. Well, happy Mother's Day, Judy.
Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you. Let's go to Linda here. Happy Mother's Day, Linda.
Good morning. I'm calling from hot Arizona.
Wow.
But I moved out here 6 years ago. But I am an adoptive mother also. And now my baby boy is the father of two little girls in Indiana.
Wow.
And I adopted him from a hospital downtown Chicago. And he wrote back to me this morning and said he would not be where he is today because of me. And and I not only celebrate Mother's Day, I celebrate his birth mother as well.
Very nice.
She made the ultimate sacrifice for, instead of just aborting, which can you imagine if he was aborted, all the lives that would not have been changed or made. So, but that's my Mother's Day today.
Well, it's very nice that you include her at least in his memory or in his life, that you didn't push that aside, but you actually did give some recognition to her.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And wherever she is, I hope she's doing well.
That's very good. Well, happy Mother's Day, Linda.
Thank you.
Very nice. Yeah, we're getting some different things here in the text here. This is interesting. 312 says, in the Ukrainian tradition, it's the parents that are celebrated on the child's birthday, and the child, their birth, is celebrated on their saints' names, on their saints' name day. So obviously a very close tie to religion, but very interesting. I was not aware that that there was any culture, I mean, that celebrated the parents on a birthday. I think that's the right way to go. It's the parents. It was a milestone in their life. As I said before, they remember every detail of that day. We don't. I think that's a great thing. I've always felt that way. Someone here at 630 texts, please name the singer and the song of the lullaby song that you played earlier. Yes, the name of the song is Lullaby. It's by Billy Joel. It's on his River of Dreams album, one of his last albums that he put out, his last full album, some 30-some years ago. Yeah, I played that song at my mom's funeral. And I still play it, and I can never not cry when I hear it, regardless of a special day or not. I have a playlist of songs that just remind me of my mom, and I frequently play it. And when that song plays, wow, I can't play it when I'm around other people because it gets pretty emotional. And I just wanted to say on this Mother's Day that, once again, to all the moms out there, enjoy your day, celebrate your day. Children out there, celebrate your moms. If you have your mom with you today, as I said, look her in the eyes, because it's a sight of a deep, devoted, unconditional love that you cannot get anywhere. Your spouse's or your partner's love, yes, can be deep, but it is still not like a mother's love. And from my standpoint, I lost my mom about 19 years ago, and I have to tell you, the sun still shines in my life, no doubt about that, but it's just not quite as bright as it used to be. I miss you, Mom. Happy Mother's Day. If you listen to when I fill in for Dean, this song should sound familiar. It's the unofficial theme song, or maybe it's the official theme. I don't pay any copyrights to them. but this is the Pop Culture Club segment with one of our best friends and pop culture gurus, Mick Kaler. How you doing, Mick?
Good to talk to you, pal. Doing great.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, we got to dust off the furniture in the pop culture club.
Yeah, yeah.
freshen that coffee pot too.
Could you explain to the listeners why I'm playing a culture club song?
Well, because culture club, and we're talking about pop culture. Okay,
ah.
You know, things that are going on in movies and music and things like that. So culture. Culture Club and
nice.
Our Pop Culture Club meshes with that.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah, I mean, I said I don't want to take a bow, but I will.
It's seamless.
Yes, it's very. Yeah. What do they say about a joke if you have to explain it?
Yeah, we got a problem, right?
Yeah, right. Well, Mick is not only a friend of mine, but a radio friend of mine. Mick and I met many years ago, sadly. not that we met, but it's that it's many years ago. In college, at Elmhurst College at WRSE FM 88.7, still around, home to famous people in Chicago, most notably Terry Hemmert went to Elmhurst College and was on WRSE. Mick has worked in the radio biz for several years, was a producer for some legends in Chicago radio, including Larry Lujack, and remember good old Murph in the Morning with his straight jacket?
Oh, yeah.
And now, did you ever work with Lisa Dent?
No, I didn't. When I was at US 99, just as I left US 99, she came and joined and was doing middays, but I was well familiar with her work, yeah.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you had an overlap there.
No.
You know, with her. And then also, Mick's work can be also heard on a regular basis on WGN Morning News. He and his partner, Al Flash, frequently put together parody songs based on things that are going on in the pop culture world and in the news. Any new little ditties you have put together?
Nothing new. We're trying to work on something for the Cubs, for PCA, and also for Shota Imanaga, but we haven't got anything yet, but we're working on it.
Well, you got to do something for Pope Leo.
Yeah, I was thinking about the Leo Shuffle, you know, Shuffle.
Oh, there you go. The Leo, oh, nice, from the Leo Shuffle song.
There you go.
Or even the Harlem Shuffle. Oh, but they had
Leo
missed.
Leo got the gig today. He is the Pope.
Yeah, there you go. But that's not all he meant. Yeah, very good. That'd be a fun one. So anyway, I like to Mick and I met over a love initially of the love of the TV show The Honeymooners. Now, I don't even know if a lot of people even know that show anymore, sadly. But when we first met several years ago, it was still on in reruns here on MeTV every Sunday. But it was much more a bigger part of the pop culture world. I mean, could you believe, Mick, that this year, 2025, is the 70th anniversary of The Honeymooners?
That's crazy. The funny thing is, though, when you watch those episodes, it shows that they're timeless. They still cover, you know, love and marriage and money and all those kinds of things.
Yeah,
you know?
But I mean, that was 70 years ago.
Yeah,
and like you said,
a lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, and what a testament to Jackie Gleason and Art Carney and Audrey Meadows and Joyce Randolph that 70 years later that show is still on. You know, you don't see reruns of the Milton Berle show,
right?
You don't see reruns of the you can, I guess, find somewhere Ozzie Harriet or some of these shows that were on, but the Honeymooners definitely made its mark. And, you know, Lucy, and between Lucy and the Honeymooners, that was pretty much the two prime shows in the 50s in terms of television.
Right, they were the bedrocks for sure.
So, Mick, are you going to be at the United Center tomorrow night?
What's going on there?
You don't know that Katy Perry is going to be there?
Oh, that's right. You know what? she still has that restraining order on me, so, you know.
You mean you don't have front row tickets?
No. I got to stay about 1,000 yards away from her, so that's a non-starter for me.
Yeah, she's going to be there tomorrow for a part of her Lifetimes tour, and you know she's still getting backlash from that space travel thing that she did with.
When she came out after she did the flight and kissed the ground. And
yeah.
To be honest, just so you know, and people don't realize this, her latest album wasn't exactly well received either. So she's been kind of on a downward spiral with those things.
Yeah, but that's still going to be big news. I mean, even because now she took so much backlash for being this kind of like this literal flower child because she brought up a daisy.
Yeah.
Into space as well, and I think most of those people that just recently went on that Jeff Bezos sponsored space I don't even know what you would call it mission, Gail King, and not coincidentally Jeff Bezos's fiance.
Yeah, she was there too, right?
And Katy Perry and a few other women. It was an all female crew, but I think that they were going to come home. Like treasured heroes.
Oh yeah, conquering heroes. And it was like, hey, you were up in space a little bit, and you're overprivileged as it is, and then you come back, and that's the end of it. And getting back to Katy Perry and the concert thing, Jim, you know, whether it's Katy Perry or even Beyonce who's coming to town next week, these female artists, they pale in comparison to the Taylor Swift phenomena. And I know they're trying to capture it, but it's hard to because Taylor's cut such a wide path of notoriety as far as those big female concerts.
Yeah, go. No, you can't. I mean, that is, you use the exact word. Taylor Swift is a phenomenon. And
yeah.
And you can't, and don't try to, you can't create it. It's organic. And
right.
It happened organically with her fans and their dedication to her and everything like that. And so, yeah, I mean, like you said, Beyonce, I like to call her Beyonce. Beyonce will be here May 15th, 17th, and 18th. So that's in the middle of the week and then through the weekend at the United Center as well. So, no, that's at Soldier Field.
She's Soldier Field.
So, yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's still a big deal, but it's just not that mania, like you said, between the fandom and everything else of a Taylor Swift. And it's hard to measure up to that.
And it's so funny how now that Taylor is not on tour, it's so funny how you don't hear about her anymore.
Right.
I mean, she was dominating headlines between her concerts and then her relationship with Kelce on the Chiefs. And now you just don't hear about either one of them. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think they're kind of holed up at his place in Missouri, and I think she's just kind of laying low. And I don't blame her. I mean, if you think of this, you know, being on that heavy ride and that wave for the last 2 or 3 years on tour, it's like at some point you might even get sick of yourself, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting here that we were just talking about the Honeymooners just kind of off on a little tangent, but and I was going to say something about this, and a texter here from 708 says, I recently attended a violence prevention class in order to renew my professional license. They referenced the Honeymooners.
I'm guessing, yeah, okay.
As his, I'm going to send you to the moon and bang Zoom with his fish.
Right. Clothes.
And I understand that there's a lot of people that look at that and they say, oh, this is domestic violence. I think the one thing I would say in defense of the show is Ralph never hit Alice.
Exactly. There was a threat.
It was always an exaggerated threat.
Yeah.
It was done for comic purposes. And at the end of the day, everyone, almost, I shouldn't say every, but out of the 39 classic episodes, I would say more than 2/3 ends with Ralph and Alice in an embrace and Ralph saying to Alice before he kisses her, baby, you're the greatest.
Right. So, and in the other instances, you know, Alice ran the show and everybody knew
yeah,
that.
And you Alice, know, Ralph, well, yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's easy with if you just watch and you take something out of context, you could say, oh, well, this was just abusive and misogynistic. And I understand that if you take a very cursory view of that. But if you really watch the show, if you really listen to the dialogue and you listen to how Ralph at the end of every show admits his faults. And
right.
Admits that he was wrong and apologizes. And as I said, every show, almost every show ends with a big embrace of which Alice is participating in fully. He says, baby, you're the greatest. And so, yeah, I understand that. But, I think it's not fair to go taking people out of their times.
Right, forward an agenda. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And judging them by our that at the time that was not considered. You can look at it and say, that's terrible. But it's hard to judge people by today's standards when you take people out of their times. Because I got news for you, folks. If you do that, 40 years from now, what you're doing today is going to be viewed as bad behavior.
Oh, sure. It'll be scorned upon, for sure.
And you're going to say, well, what? Everybody was doing it. If you hang around long enough, believe me. And so be careful about casting stones. But anyway.
Right.
Why don't we take a quick break? So this is why we have a nice little discussion going into the news at 12:30. We'll take a quick break. I've got Mick Kaler here. We're talking about pop culture in the Pop Culture Club here at WGN Radio, 7:20 a.m. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Dean Richards. We'll be back after this. No switching. Every year, I am always torn about even discussing this topic. But I...
Okay, which one is it?
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to mention it because it's become such a... They're doing this as a publicity stunt. It doesn't reflect rock and roll anymore. They've broadened it, yet they won't change the name. They like the controversy. They like people like us debating it and talking about it, which gives them publicity, which makes me mad because I'm falling into their trap.
Right.
But at the same time, I do like to talk about it because in many cases, especially this year, the nominees do help to shine a light on some bands that I feel deserve some recognition and are, in many cases, because of our short attention span now, all but forgotten.
Right.
And so you get a chance to talk about them, and maybe that one person that's listening or gets a little curious and goes, well, let me see what they're talking about. So once again, this year they announced, and talk about, did you see how they announced the inductees this year?
No, how'd they do that one?
On American Idol.
Oh, yeah, because that's, you know, that's music and what's everybody watching, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah, but nobody there on that show either knows or sings any of the songs by these people.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be foreign to them, right.
Yeah, so I don't know if I really, I mean, it was so funny when Ryan Seacrest announced the names.
Yeah.
You know that they had these big applause signs because there's no way that teenagers are going to be screaming when they say the name Bad Company.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that one up first because the injustice that Bad Company, and especially lead singer Paul Rogers, was not inducted years ago just blows me away.
Yeah, I mean, let me just read the inductees. So this year's inductees, there will be the ceremony will be on November 8th. It'll be broadcast for the first time live on Disney Plus, streamed live on November 8th, and then it'll be on Hulu the next day. But the inductees for 2025 are, as you said, Bad Company, Chubby Checker, Joe Cocker, Cyndi Lauper, Outkast, Soundgarden, White Stripes. They have a couple of other small categories here called the Musical Influence Award. This is where it starts to get crazy on my part. Salt and Peppa. I don't know how that's rock and roll. I don't know.
Same here. I don't know that either.
But one person who is one of my all-time favorite singer-songwriters, just criminally underappreciated, unknown, and one of the great songwriters of the last 50 years, Warren Zevon.
Oh, yeah. Chicago native, too.
Yeah, he was born here. Didn't live here very long, but was born here.
Right.
That's why I said I'm torn because I fall into the trap of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame getting me to talk about this. But I'll have to say, if I get a chance to talk about Warren Zevon, it's worth it for me.
Well, yeah, and everybody has their favorites, and like I said, people like to talk about injustices, whether it's the fact that Warren Zevon should have been in a long time ago, probably when he was still alive. And same with Bad Company, you know, that, again, like you said, stirs up conversation.
Yeah, well, the thing, the biggest problem, don't get me wrong, when the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame opened, I was very excited when the actual physical plant opened in Cleveland.
Yeah,
In the early 90s. And, in fact, I even made a donation and became a charter member. Okay.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh, yeah. I've been there twice myself. It's a great place.
Yeah, I've been there like three or four times. Have I enjoyed it? But what gets me mad in the last 15 to 20 years is just that I have no problem with them expanding the inductees. I have no problem with that. The music world has changed. When the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was first conceptualized in the mid-80s, about 86, rock and roll was almost at its zenith, if you will, because of MTV.
Sure.
And so and then they were celebrating the past with, you know, your Chuck Berrys and your Little Richards. And so it made sense. The baby boomers were taking control of the culture at that time, and rock and roll was their music.
And classic rock was also hitting its zenith, too.
Exactly. And so it made perfect sense because rock and roll was always viewed as this counterculture thing, and now it was the mainstream. So I get it. But and now in the 25 or 40 years since then, music has changed. Rock and roll has greatly declined in its popularity and its exposure. Rap and hip hop are the dominant and pop, especially female oriented pop, dominate. Like you just said before, Taylor Swift, and we've got Katy Perry and Chappell Roan, and I mean, if you watch the Grammys, I don't even know if men make music anymore.
You're right.
All the nominees are women. If there is a man
nominating, for sure, girl power.
Yeah, if there's a man who's nominated, he's usually featured on a female song. So
right, collaboration or whatever, right?
And I have no problem with that. That's the way society is moving. That's the way it goes. And but my view is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame needs to change its name.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
When you put salt and pepper in there, I don't care how you try to rationalize it. That's rap. That's hip hop.
Right. Salt was not a rocker. Neither was Peppa.
No. And they never want to be.
Right.
In fact, I have a new respect for Jay-Z, because apparently, from what I read, Jay-Z was he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but apparently he was he did not want to be inducted. He said, "I'm not a rock and roller."
Right. He knew his label. He knew where he belonged.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I give him credit for that. For actually, I mean, he wound up accepting it, but at least he didn't say okay, because it's like all they have to do is call it the Music Hall of Fame, and all this controversy goes away.
Right. Popular Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly. And which is fine. You could or call it the Rock and Roll and Pop Music, but it's not just you can't tell me that Dionne Warwick is rock and roll.
Well, and again, a lot of this started, especially years ago, when Madonna was inducted in, and it was like, wait a minute, she's again pop music. She's not a rocker,
But see, there's no other Music Hall of Fame, so
right.
This one now becomes the catch-all. We're talking to Mick Kaler here in the Pop Culture Club. We're talking about the latest 2025. Inductees to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, one of those being Bad Company, playing right here with their classic cover of Feel Like Making Love. My gosh, so many, you mentioned before, so many great Bad Company songs. How could they not have been inducted long before? They were one of the biggest bands, hard rock bands of the 70s and even in the early 80s.
They really are deserving, and I'm sure they were waiting around too, saying, "Hey, wait a minute, what about us?"
Yeah,
so,
I mean, feel like
see that's finally happening for them, because they had numerous hits, and again, like you said before, Jim, staples of music that we hear to this day on classic rock, it's still there.
Oh my God, Feel Like Making Love, Burning Sky, Good Lovin' Gone Bad, Bad Company, the song, Shooting Star, Rock and Roll Fantasy. I love Silver, Blue, and Gold.
Right,
one of my favorites of all time. Can't Get Enough. Rock Steady, Moving On. I mean, listen to this.
Running Rock and Roll Fantasy,
Running with the Pack. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they got a whole list of them.
And somebody texted, and they're exactly correct. How is Jethro Tull not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah, that's another strange one. You're right.
I just can't figure it out. I don't know. Like I said, somebody should put together a Pop Hall of Fame. Because right now, as I said, hip hop and pop and rap are the dominant, and they're going to be dominant for years to come. So it's time to instead of diluting the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if you don't want to change your name, then the hip hop acts should put together a hip hop and rap Hall of Fame.
Sure, there'd be inductees waiting to go. Exactly.
And of course, with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, now they have this fan voting. Which, of course, means nothing.
Right.
Because Fish won the fan voting, and they didn't get inducted.
Yeah, so exactly. It's like a waste of time right there.
So I want to ask you a question, Mick.
Yeah.
How many farewell Who tours have you been to?
Well, let's see. It was 82. there was 89.
Right.
There was more after that in the 90s.
Yeah, there was at least one more. Yeah, there was at least. I've been to at least three.
I saw the post up the other day about them coming to the United Center, and I'm like, okay, I've been to a bunch of these. It's like, do I want to do this again? And you know me. I mean, when people always talk about who do you love more, the Beatles or the Stones, I always answer the Who, because I'm an ultimate Who fan. But it's like, are we going to do this again or what?
Yeah, no, I feel, even though the Stones, I know that everybody, you know, the Stones, and there's a listener out there named Jim who loves the Stones, who I know, who literally travels around the world. And this is no shot against you, Jim. I love you. But when you ask me, I have to put Beatles Who Stones, not the other way around. You know what I mean?
Right.
So yeah, I saw the Who about before COVID at Madison Square Garden, and I wasn't all that impressed. And they even admitted that the show wasn't that good. This is supposedly their final one. Roger Daltrey is getting a little testy. Did you see that they fired Zach Starkey for about 3 days?
Right, it was Roger's overreaction to one bad show, right?
Yeah, so and Roger's always been having some voice problems, but now he sounds like he's just getting downright ornery.
Yeah, and cranky and all that. But the funny thing is, though, they call this tour "The Song Is Over," and somewhere along the lines, there's going to be another tour saying, "Won't get fooled again." Now the song is over.
Right. Well, the fans should say, "I'm not going to get fooled again."
Yeah.
Yeah, September 7th at the United Center. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say, everybody loves them, or many people do, and they know that people are going to come out. But why even put that mask on? Because they could come back again for another tour, you know?
Well, the only thing is that they are getting old. I mean, you know, they are in their 80s, and there is a point when you just have to stop. And and so I think this might be the last time. But somebody texts here, what about REO Speedwagon? Excellent point.
They're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They really aren't.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Yeah. Styx is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's another travesty right there. I mean, those are both two, you know, not just because being from Illinois and all that, just, you know, staples of rock and roll. Rock and roll, not pop.
That's
rock
what I mean.
And roll.
Yeah. Yeah, September 7th at the United Center. I'm sure they're going to add at least one or more shows to that string there. They've left the dates kind of open, so I would assume that. Although Roger does contractually needs a day, at least one day off between shows because of his voice.
Right, too. So they can maybe do a Friday and a Sunday or a Sunday and a Tuesday, but he has to because of insurance reasons. He can't sing two nights in a row.
Yeah, so anyway. Yeah. Well, Mick, it's always fun talking pop culture with you. Thanks so much for taking time. I knew Mick's mom, who passed away a few years ago. She was a great woman as well, and I'm sure she's in your thoughts today.
Absolutely. I hope all the mothers out there have a great Mother's Day. Certainly deserve it, and always a pleasure talking to you, buddy.
Okay, Mick, take care.
All right, see ya.
I want to talk a little interesting charity that I was made aware of recently, and I wanted to welcome to the show one of the people who started this charity and is doing some great work for the unhoused and homeless people in the Chicago area and the suburbs, Anne Marie Frank, who is one of the founders of Loving Lunches. Welcome to the show, Anne Marie.
Hi, Jim. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, explain. This is an interesting way that that your work, this cause began. It began during COVID. Your sister apparently started, and then you got involved, and now you're a full-fledged charity organization. So just give us a little rundown as to how this started and what you do.
Absolutely. Yes, my sister was just contacted by a friend that worked for Catholic Charities and was asked to make some lunches. And she's like, absolutely, I'd be happy to. So they asked her to make, I think, 10 or something. And she's like, well, if I'm going to drive downtown, I'm going to make 50. So she did. And then she told our family during one of those Zoom calls. And I said, well, I'd like to help. And so I started making lunches with her. And then she got really busy. So she was funding the work or funding the program for us. And my daughter and I, Kendall, would make them in our home. And then we just started posting just random pictures on Facebook in our Des Plaines community, and people wanted to help. I also own a dance and music school in Des Plaines called AMA, Academy of Performing Arts. And since we couldn't see them in person, we just started asking, hey, does anybody want to maybe donate some protein bars or some juice boxes? And within one day, Jim, my front step to my roof was filled with food to put in these lunches. So when that happened, I thought, you know what, maybe we're onto something. People want to help. They just don't know what to do. So we just continued making the lunches. And I thought, as long as the donations keep coming in, I am happy to do this. So then I belong to the Des Plaines Chamber of Commerce. So I mentioned to them, you know, we're doing this. And then the businesses were giving us their stimulus checks, the ones that were doing really well. And I thought, okay, we have to be an official charity. So we became a 501c3 almost right away. And again, started posting on Facebook. And then the whole Northwest suburban, you know, Park Ridge, Mount Prospect started joining in. So it's been a lot of fun.
How do you distribute these? By hand or where? How do people get, you make these? Are you still making them in your kitchen?
No. So I own the Dance Studio in Des Plaines, and we have a lot of room there. So we make them there. And we started bringing in youth groups. You know, we have our own students at AMA Academy of Performing Arts, but then they start telling their friends. So we'd get the scout groups coming in and different sports groups, high school NHS groups. So it just organically grew without us really, just word of mouth. And so every week we make these lunches. We make hundreds every week. And then we were starting to distribute them by hand, as you said. We'd go under the viaducts where we'd see the tent cities. And we were making so many lunches, there were so many volunteers that we needed help. So then we contacted different churches that are hubs for the homeless community, and they help us distribute them every week.
So you literally, at the beginning, though, you went to, like, within the city and suburbs, you just literally went to places where you would expect some of the unhoused to be, and whether they were tent cities, and you just literally handed them out.
We sure did. And they were so kind and so appreciative. And if we were to Tent City and there were 16 people there, they literally would say, we just need 16. We'd like you to go up the street or down the highway. We know there's another group there. Because they're time sensitive because they expire. Because we do put fresh deli sandwiches in every lunch. So everyone's just so kind, just so kind.
So there was no resistance at all? I mean, somebody comes walking up to them are they brown bag lunches?
They are brown bag lunches, yeah. And it's funny because we would make them on Sunday. So I'd go like at 8 o'clock at night, it'd be dark. And we would just pull up in my car and I'd come out with a box and they would meet me. And and they were very, very happy to accept the food. It's been amazing.
So what is a typical lunch?
Typical lunch is a deli sandwich, like a ham and cheese sandwich. We do include a juice box, a piece of fruit, usually a banana, because a lot of these folks don't have access to dental hygiene. So we want something nice for them to chew on. And then we have protein bars, dessert packets. We put mayo and mustard in there because that's what we always go back and forth. I like mayo. My sister likes mustard. So we put them both in there. And then a bag of chips. Oh, we also include a kindness card. So that's how we started getting really young kids involved. We write a note like, you matter. We love you. Enjoy your lunch. It was made by love. The kids sign their names and their age. And they draw hearts and flowers on the cards. And as we were making hundreds instead of a few dozen a week, I did not know if that was a huge component. Like, do we need to still make these cards? And one day when I had dropped off a lunch under the viaduct, the first thing that the gentleman pulled out of the lunch was the card. And then he held it to his heart and after he read it and then put it in his back pocket. And I thought, oh, my goodness, that card is going to last way longer than the food. So we make sure we've made 100,000 lunches as of yesterday, and we make sure all 100,000 lunches have had a kindness card in them, made by either a child or maybe a senior citizen. We make sure that they have that extra little love in there.
So we should say that you've recently reached that milestone. Not only this year are you celebrating your fifth year, but you've also now have made more than 100. In fact, yesterday, apparently, right?
It was yesterday, and we had a big party for it. This week total, we made 1,000 lunches with 100 people to celebrate our 100,000th lunch. And we just turned 5 years old in April.
Wow.
So, yes, it's been a big celebratory couple of months. It's been amazing.
So now you go through different organizations who distribute it. So you're not doing as much of the literal, driving up to the corner and handing these out.
No, not anymore. I will if we need to, but we have the churches help us. I go to the churches, or sometimes they send drivers to me. It just depends. But we get all kinds of kids involved, and they call me to book. Like, we'll do it on a week. We do it twice a week, once on a weekend, usually in my studio. Because there's room for it, or once a week I go to a corporation. We've had Walgreens call us. We've had Old National Bank. We go to their headquarters. We go to accounting firms, law firms. So once a week I will go to an on-site place to make the lunches with their employees or their crew or their team. So it's been great.
I'm talking to Anne-Marie Frank, who is the head of the local charity here in the Chicago area called Loving Lunches, which provides food, lunches, to the unhoused throughout the city. So is it throughout the city and the suburbs?
Yes. We reach as many people as needed.
And is the food purchased through donations? How, like, do you literally go to the grocery store, or how do you get the food?
It is, yes. Okay, so we accept monetary donations. At first, we were just taking the food. I said, just bring what you can. But then my second bedroom became literally a food pantry. So I said, let's focus on getting monetary donations, and then I do the shopping. So I go to Sam's Club twice a week, and I get what I need to make my 200 lunches each time. And, we just take it from there. So I do all the footwork. It's very easy.
So now that you've reached the 5-year, 100,000 lunch milestone, in terms of moving forward, what do you need, or what help do you need to sustain and grow Loving Lunches?
Oh, that's so sweet of you to ask. So monetary donations are absolutely number one. We need to build a website, so that's our next thing on our list. But we always need food. Usually when the corporations have us come up, they do purchase all the food, which is so kind. But when we have groups, sometimes we have, special needs groups or young children that cannot provide the food. So we definitely need monetary donations so I can go and shop and pick those things up.
And so how can someone donate?
They can donate by contacting me at amaclasses.com/lovinglunches, or they can call me at 847-299-2233. I would love to hear from them.
Well, very good. Congratulations. Anne-Marie Frank of Loving Lunches started 5 years ago, seeing a need during the pandemic for people in need for food, and now it's grown into a full-blown charity that's obviously doing well and is obviously filling a void and filling a need. So great work, great enthusiasm, and hopefully you can donate to Anne-Marie. Give that number one more time where they can donate.
Absolutely. It's 847-299-2233 or amaclasses.com/lovinglunches.
Great. Thanks a lot. Anne-Marie Frank of Loving Lunches. Good luck.
Thank you so much, Jim. Have a great day. Happy Mother's Day, everyone.
Happy Mother's Day to you. I assume you have any kids?
I do. I have 3 kids. I have Kendall, Jesse, and Conrad, and we are all together today, so we're excited.
Well, they better make you a loving lunch.
Oh, they go above and beyond. Thank you.
Okay, well, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm Jim Toronto. I've been filling in here for Dean Richards the last 4 hours. I don't know about you. If you've listened since 9 o'clock, it's flown by for me. I'm looking at the producer, Patrick. He can't wait to get out of here, I can tell. No, I'm just joking. You've done a great job, Patrick. I appreciate it. You could have jumped on the microphone. Why don't you say hi before we say bye? Or
hi,
there you go.
Sorry, wrong button.
Man, wrong button. You're hitting the wrong buttons. You're the button guy. I'm counting on you.
I'll be here all afternoon. I'll be with Karen Conti and then Rick Kogan too. So,
oh, very good. Say I won't hi be to out Rick of here for yet. Me. I haven't seen Rick in many years. Say hi to Rick for me. Anyway, I have had a great time here, especially on a Mother's Day, to share this day with you. I've just really had a ball. I appreciate it. I love being on the radio, and I love being on WGN. And so this has been a thrill for me, and it's great to be back. If I haven't spoke to you guys in a while, if you like what you heard, I have a podcast every week here at WGNradio.com, so you can listen to that. So just want to say I'm Jim Toronto. Thanks, Dean, for the opportunity. Happy Mother's Day, everyone, and we will hopefully talk soon. Have a good day.